I think I see them. The young man in the green parka, standing directly beneath the huge circular clock in St. Pancras Station, took the phone away from his ear and checked a blurred JPEG on the rectangular screen. The English magician had sent the image a couple of hours ago, date-stamped June 4, 1159, 00. Its colors washed and faded. The grainy picture looked like it had been taken by an overhead security camera. It showed an older man with short gray hair, accompanied by two fair teens, climbing onto a train. Rising up on his toes, the young man scanned the station for the trio he'd briefly glimpsed. For a moment, he thought he'd lost them in the milling crowd, but even if he had, they wouldn't get far. One of his sisters was downstairs, and another was on the street outside, watching the entrance. Now, where had the old man and the teenagers gone? Narrow, pinched nostrils flared as he sorted through the countless scents in the station. He identified and dismissed the mixed stink of too many humani, the myriad perfumes and deodorants, the gels and pastes, the greasy odor of fried food from the station's restaurants, the richer aroma of coffee, and the metallic, oily tang of the train engines and carriages. Nostrils opened unnaturally wide as he closed his eyes and tilted his head back. The odors he was seeking were older, wilder, unnatural. There. Mint. Just the merest suggestion. Orange. No more than the vaguest hint. Vanilla. Little more than a trace. Hidden behind small rectangular sunglasses, his blue-black pupils dilated. He sniffed the air, tracing the gossamer threads of scent through the vast train station. He had them now. The older man from the image on his phone was striding down the station concourse directly toward him. He was wearing black jeans and a scuffed leather jacket, and carried a small overnight case in his left hand. And just as in the picture taken earlier, he was followed by two blonde teenagers, alike enough to be brother and sister. The boy was taller than the girl, and they both wore backpacks. The young man snapped a quick picture with his cell phone camera and sent it to Dr. John Dee. Although he had nothing but contempt for the English magician, there was no point in making an enemy of him. Dee was the agent of one of the more senior and certainly the most dangerous of all the Dark Elders. Pulling the hood of his green parka over his head, the young man turned away as the trio drew near him and dialed his sister, who was waiting downstairs.
"It's definitely Flamel and the twins," he murmured into the phone, speaking the ancient language that had eventually become Gaelic. "They're heading in your direction. We'll take them when they get onto Euston Road."
Snapping his phone shut, the young man in the hooded parka set off after the alchemist and the American twins. He moved easily through the early afternoon crowd, looking like just another teenager, anonymous and unnoticed in his sloppy jeans, scuffed sneakers, and overlarge coat. His head and face concealed by a hood, eyes invisible behind the dark sunglasses. Despite his appearance, however, the young man had never been remotely human. He and his sisters had first come to this land when it was still joined to the European mainland, and for generations they had been worshipped as gods. He bitterly resented being ordered around by Dee, who was, after all, nothing more than a humani. But the English magician had promised the hooded boy a delectable prize. Nicholas Flamel, the legendary alchemist. Dee's instructions were clear. The boy and his sisters could have Flamel, but the twins must not be touched. The boy's lips twisted. His sisters would easily capture the twins, while he would have the honor of killing Flamel.
A coal-black tongue darted out of the corner of his mouth to lick his lips at the thought. They would feast off the alchemist for weeks, and, of course, they would keep the tastiest morsels for Mother. Nicholas Flamel slowed, allowing Sophie and Josh to catch up with him. Forcing a smile, he pointed to the 30-foot-tall bronze statue of a couple embracing beneath the clock. "It's called the Meeting Place," he said loudly, and then added in a whisper, "We're being followed." Still smiling, he leaned into Josh and murmured, "Don't even think about turning around." "Who?" Sophie asked. "What?" Josh said tightly. He was feeling nauseous and dizzy. His newly awakened senses were overwhelmed by the scents and sounds of the train station. A throbbing headache pulsed at the base of his skull, and the light was so bright he wished he had a pair of sunglasses. "Yes. What is the better question?" Nicholas said grimly. He raised a finger to point to the clock, as if he were talking about it. "I'm not sure what's here," he admitted. "Something ancient. I felt it the moment we stepped off the train." "Felt it?" Josh asked, disoriented, and getting more confused by the second. He hadn't felt this sick since he'd got heatstroke in the Mojave Desert. "A tingle, like an itch. My aura reacted to the aura of whoever, whatever, is here. When you have a little more control over your own auras, you'll be able to feel the same."